I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's February 7th, and we have a lot to talk about. It's not unusual for someone living with MS to experience feelings of isolation. And those feelings of isolation can sometimes lead you down the path to depression. Then you find yourself with one more thing to manage, and that's definitely not the formula for living well with MS. The ironic thing about those feelings of isolation is that you can experience them even when you're with other people. It's that feeling that while everyone is being supportive, nobody really gets it. As well-meaning as friends and family can be, in most cases, they've never experienced what it's like to actually live with MS. That's why connecting with others who are living with MS can be such a difference maker. My guests today are Debbie Bennett, the manager of community engagement at the National MS Society, and Ricky Maxwell, an MS Society self-help group member and leader. And we're talking about how and where you can find support and connect with others who do get it, who know what I call the secret handshake that only other people affected by MS really understand. But before we get to my conversation with Debbie Bennett and Ricky Maxwell, there are a few other things that you should know about. The National MS Society announced a $7.8 million investment to support new research projects that will fill in some of the existing gaps in the Pathways to Cures research roadmap. And we've talked about the Pathways to Cures Global Research Initiative before on the podcast. It's a research initiative that's focused on stopping MS progression, restoring lost function, and ending MS forever. And if you'd like a refresher on the details of the Pathways to Cures initiative, I'll invite you to listen to episode number 238 of Real Talk MS, and you'll find the link to that episode in today's show notes. This latest $7.8 million investment is part of the National MS Society's $30 million annual investment that supports 220 new and ongoing MS research studies around the world, including support of the MS research workforce and leadership from the International Progressive MS Alliance. One of the new research projects being funded will enable a team at the Cleveland Clinic to investigate whether activating a specific immune mechanism will turn off chronic inflammation that's linked to MS progression. Another project will enable a research team at the University of Pennsylvania to investigate features of brain cells called astrocytes that could be manipulated to enhance myelin repair. And another funded project will enable a team at the University of Western Australia to determine whether components of the brain that are targeted by the immune system in MS are actually being mistakenly identified by the immune system as components of the Epstein-Barr virus. There are 14 new projects being funded, but when you consider just these three projects, any one of them could be a major game changer in stopping progression, restoring lost function, and ending MS. If you'd like to review all 14 research projects, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And if you have the Real Talk MS app installed on your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet, you'll find that research summary waiting for you under the bonus content tab. We're learning more and more about the important role that sleep plays in everyone's overall health, and that may be especially true for people who are living with MS. More than half the people living with MS experience sleep disturbances, and lack of restful sleep can cause daytime drowsiness and make some MS symptoms feel worse. Now, new research published by a team at the University of Michigan shows a link between sleep and cognitive issues among people living with MS. The research team analyzed questionnaires completed by 63,866 nurses who were enrolled in the Nurses' Health Study. Of this group, 524 nurses were living with MS. In these questionnaires, the study participants were asked whether they had diagnosed or suspected sleep disorders and whether as a result they experienced daytime drowsiness. The nurses were also asked whether they experienced problems with memory or with cognitive tasks like following instructions or navigating familiar streets. The researchers discovered that sleep disorders, sleepiness, and cognitive problems were significantly more common in the nurses who were living with MS compared to the nurses who didn't have MS. Applying some advanced statistical modeling, the research team showed that the occurrence of sleep disorders and sleepiness were significantly associated with the development of cognitive impairment. Now, the good news is that sleep disorders are treatable, and other research in people who don't have MS is demonstrating that treating sleep disorders may improve cognitive function. Getting a good night's sleep is important for all of us. And if you're living with MS, you might consider sleep to be part of your everyday or every night self-care routine. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. And if you'd like to learn more about how sleep affects MS, along with specific things you can do to ensure you're getting the best possible night's sleep, you might want to listen to episode number 259 of Real Talk MS, when my guest is the director of the Sleep, Health, and Wellness Lab at the University of Kansas Medical Center Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science, Dr. Katie Siangsakan. And you'll find that link in today's show notes. While we're talking about dealing with cognitive issues in MS, results of a study of 110 people living with MS in Amsterdam showed that both cognitive rehabilitation therapy and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy were effective in improving cognition. Cognitive rehabilitation therapy is designed to improve a person's ability to perform cognitive tasks after experiencing a brain injury. This type of intervention takes either a restorative approach, which is designed to retrain lost cognitive skills, or a compensatory approach, which is designed to provide strategies to compensate for lost cognitive skills. And mindfulness-based cognitive therapy teaches a person to focus their attention on the present moment in a non-judgmental manner. In the study, cognitive rehabilitation therapy was successful in helping study participants achieve cognitive goals in the long term, and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy was effective in improving their cognitive performance, although the research team noted that most of these benefits were lost within 6 months of the cognitive therapy sessions ending. Well, more work is obviously required here, but it would seem that the research team discovered treatments that were effective as long as treatment was being given. Perhaps future studies will demonstrate more effective ways to make the benefits of this type of non-invasive treatment last longer. Between 40 and 60% of the people living with MS experience cognitive dysfunction at some point in their disease course. It might be deficits in recent memory, attention, information processing speed, or executive function. But experiencing cognitive dysfunction can be jarring, even scary. With physical disability, you never stop being the person you've always been. You may face physical challenges or even limitations, but you're still you. That isn't exactly true when you experience a change in cognitive function. In that moment, you can feel as if you've changed as an individual. So finding pathways to successfully resolving cognitive decline is an important step that keeps someone feeling like they're the same person they've always been. And that's no small thing. If you'd like to learn more about this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. The National MS Society has announced that this year's recipient of the Barancic Prize for Innovation in MS Research is Dr. Ruth Ann Merry, a neurologist and researcher at the University of Manitoba in Canada. Dr. Mary has been a guest on previous episodes of Real Talk MS, where she's shared details and insights about some of her pioneering research that has had a major impact on MS care around the world. In 2010, Dr. Mary published the first report suggesting that comorbidities or other health conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and high cholesterol could increase disease progression and disability in people living with MS. Since that initial study, Dr. Mary and her team have shown that various comorbidities affect all aspects of MS, including time to diagnosis, severity of disability at the time of diagnosis, the use of healthcare, relapse rates, and mortality. In 2012, Dr. Mary published a landmark paper showing that people with MS increased their use of healthcare through visits to the doctor during the 5 years before the first symptoms of MS occurred. Dr. Mary's work in this area has led to the recognition of the prodromal phase of MS, which is defined as an early phase of unspecified symptoms indicating a high risk for a future diagnosis of MS. And we've discussed the MS prodrome on previous episodes of the podcast, and as researchers learn more about the MS prodrome, it could lead to a time when early intervention, I'm talking about intervention before even the first typical symptom of MS has occurred, well, that could lead to preventing MS from ever developing. Dr. Mary is a co-author of the Pathways to Cures Research Roadmap. She's the vice chair of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee and scientific director of the NARCOMS Registry. She's also the past chair of the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS and the past chair of the Medical Advisory Committee for the MS Society of Canada. I can share from my own experience that if you spend even 5 minutes talking with Dr. Mary, you can't help but recognize her tireless and seemingly limitless commitment to improving the lives of people living with MS. I, for one, couldn't be happier seeing Dr. Mary's contributions recognized by being named this year's recipient of the Barancic Prize for Innovation in MS Research, and I'm looking forward to sitting down for a conversation with her in just a couple of weeks at the America's Committee for Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis 2023 Forum. For now, we'll just add our congratulations to Dr. Mary for this richly deserved recognition. I want to give you a final reminder that the National MS Society's 2023 Pathways to Wellness in MS takes place online in just 2 days on February 9th, from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. This free virtual program is focused on emotional, spiritual, and social wellness for people affected by MS. You'll hear from experts on the current research in positive psychology, mood disorders, and stress management. You'll learn how connections to nature, religion, or mindfulness can positively impact your quality of life. And you'll become empowered to identify healthy relationships while learning strategies designed to strengthen your personal relationships at home, work, and in your community. It's all happening online from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time this Thursday, February 9th. If you'd like to learn more or register for this free program, you'll find a link in today's show notes. When you think about emotional, spiritual, and social wellness, you quickly come to realize that these are important goals that are hard to reach by yourself. Connecting with others who are living with MS, people who truly understand what you may be going through, can make a huge difference in your quality of life. In a moment, we'll meet my guests, Debbie Bennett and Ricky Maxwell, who are joining me to discuss how, when it comes to easy ways to find support for your day-to-day well-being, these connections can be among the most important connections you're likely to make. Having a network of family and friends to fall back on will always make a difference when you encounter bumps in the road we call life. But if you're living with MS, connecting with other people who are affected by MS can enrich your life on a whole new, different, and often more powerful level. Joining me to talk about why it's important to make connections in the MS community, along with some ways for you to make those connections, are Debbie Bennett, the Manager of Community Engagement at the National MS Society, and Ricky Maxwell, an MS Society self-help group member and leader. Debbie, Ricky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. I'm honored, sir.
Debbie, why don't we start off by having you explain why it's important for people living with MS to connect with each other.
Sure. So sharing experiences with others who understand what you're going through can be very gratifying and often fosters instant connections. These connections can often decrease isolation. They provide great emotional support and they can increase quality of life because learning new strategies can build confidence in your ability to address challenges. And most important, they provide an opportunity to help others.
Ricky, can you tell me a little bit about when you were diagnosed and maybe what some of the circumstances were that led up to that diagnosis?
Oh, yes. thank you for having me. I was diagnosed approximately 7 years ago. And I had no clue. One morning I woke up and my left cheek was numb. So it continued to the rest of the day. And my PCP told me to go to the ER. And then that's when they diagnosed me with after imaging and stuff with multiple sclerosis.
How did that feel at first?
At first, I had no idea what it was. I had no idea what it was. And I did some research later on. After reading, I was in a fog. You know, I've always been healthy, never had any issues, and it hit me hard. It did. And then after reading and researching it, you know, looking at possibilities later on in life, it hit me hard. But I can say that now, this present time, everything is going well. And I have to say, whatever you read out there, don't let it get to your head, because the WebMD and all that internet stuff will take you down a bad road. So just get educated. The National MS Society is one of the foremost areas that you're going to get the education for MS.
So Debbie gave us what I'll call the theory behind connecting with other people who are living with MS, but you're living it, Ricky. So once you were diagnosed, what was it like for you the first time you connected with someone else who was living with MS?
I have to say it was rewarding. I never thought I would step into a self-help group, had no clue. My first time going to a self-help group, I remember I sat in my car at this parking lot and cried like a baby. And that was my realization that I had MS. But I have to tell you, when I walked into that group, and I felt a sense of love and welcoming and a sense of understanding. 5-10 minutes into the group, I just felt so relaxed. And it has made me a better person. It has educated me. And I learned from other people with the MS journey. I learned and talked to everybody and got more of a feel of what MS was. So I say a self-help group, in person, virtual, whatever, try it. It will be beneficial. I guarantee that.
Joining a self-help group is one thing, but Ricky, you decided to become a self-help group leader. What inspired you to step into that role, and how is it different being a self-help group leader?
I'm retired law enforcement, so I've always had a career of helping people and being there for people. I had no clue that I would be a self-help group leader for the National MS Society. I was enjoying being a member, but my mentor, Elise Holtzbins, approached me about taking over the group. And I felt so honored that she would even consider me to do it. And I saw how rewarding it was to me and how it enhanced my journey and helped me. And I said, there's no way in the world I could say no to this. No way. Because I saw how impactful it was to me. And ever since I've been a group leader, it has changed my life drastically to the positive way. And I would not give it up. It's so important. And you learn from everybody. I mean, we have National MS Society. Miss Bennett is magnificent. 24/7. If you need anything from her, it's a family. It's a family, and it's definitely something that I'm happy I took upon myself, and I will continue it. I love it.
Debbie, besides providing strong emotional and mental health support, what are some of the other benefits of connecting with other people who are living with MS?
So connections provide a two-way avenue of information and resources. Some groups may have a focus on education, say, and they bring in a guest speaker on a particular topic or watch videos. Some are advocates and they go out into the community doing their activist thing. And some of them have a wellness or a physical component to it. Maybe they exercise together, something like that.
Ricky, you know, there's someone who's listening to our conversation right now, and you and Debbie have them thinking about checking out a self-help group. What should they expect?
I will go into it with no expectations. Walk into it with an open mind and an open heart and experience it. If it's in person or it's virtual, leave the expectations to the side and just go in there with an open mind and an open heart. And I almost guarantee you, you will get something beneficial from it. There's times that I've held my group and there was one person that came to the group. But I tell you, that one-on-one connection that day was so powerful because it was meant to be. That person needed that connection with a one-on-one because they might not have felt comfortable with multiple people there. So just go in there with open mind, open heart, and you will definitely benefit from it. Because I know I benefited from it. I would never have thought I would be going to a self-help group, not even open for discussion. But I can tell you, it has changed my life and has made my life much, much better.
You know, Ricky, we've just come through a couple of years where the only way self-help groups could meet was virtually. Now the world is opening up again and groups are starting to meet face-to-face. Do you notice any qualitative differences between virtual interactions and face-to-face interactions?
I personally don't. I think that the benefits in both areas, face-to-face and in-person, we're going to be starting our group back in January in-person, but we're going to also continue our virtual. So we're going to be holding two groups a month because we don't want to leave out some of the people who are still not comfortable with coming into the in-person. And plus, I also have a lot of members that do not live in the area where the in-person will be. So the benefits of it is it's an individual thing. Because I know there's some people who don't like the virtual because they don't like talking personally over online and their personal information, which is perfectly fine. But I think the benefits are wonderful on either side. We can find something beneficial from in person and online, you know, virtual. So you will get something out of either one. I guarantee that. Just come with an open mind and an open heart.
Debbie, we're very fortunate to be living in a time where there are so many ways for people to connect with each other. We certainly don't have time to run through all of them. But do you have some suggestions for additional resources that can help people connect?
Sure. So the National MS Society has online communities, which are open to all people affected by MS and offer opportunities to give and receive support in a safe environment. These communities are moderated by trained volunteers who assist in leading conversations and provide resources. And they allow people to find community anytime from anywhere in the world. For instance, there's a Facebook community group, which is for people affected by MS to comment and connect with others for advice and support. There's the Mighty, which is a similar source of connection. This has a group where people might have comorbidities like depression, anxiety, or diabetes. It's not just MS specific. MS Discord is an international group with live chatting available 24/7, also peer-led. with channels of support for family members. And you can always find these online communities available on the National MS Society website.
We often say that MS impacts families, not just individuals. Debbie, are there support groups available for MS caregivers as well?
Yeah, so living with MS requires a team effort for sure. A support partner can be a spouse, family member, or a friend, anyone who provides emotional support and assistance when it's needed. So they definitely need support too. We have a webpage devoted to support partners that includes a guidebook and information and tips and resources. There are also some virtual support groups available, some of them specific to multiple sclerosis, but then there are many more that are more generic to chronic disabilities. So our website has a bunch of resources, as well as I know the Well Spouse Association does and caregiver.com.
Debbie, there are about 70,000 U.S. Armed Services veterans who are living with MS. That's such a significant number that the Department of Defense funds research that's specifically focused on multiple sclerosis. I'm curious, are there any resources and connection opportunities that are specifically for veterans?
So the Society, along with several other organizations like the VA and the PVA, can help. One resource we have is this program called Ask an Expert, which is specifically for veterans and takes place quarterly. The next one will be in March. Then there are blogs on our website. There are support groups specifically for veterans. On the website, nationalmssociety.org/veterans, you can get information. We have navigators that can help connect with any of the resources that might help.
Well, Debbie Bennett and Ricky Maxwell, thank you for what you each do to improve the lives of people who are affected by MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your service, sir.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/284. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.